I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thanks for joining us for the podcast today, brought to you by Blackfoot Communications.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Deep into the legislative session. So deep that they're starting to see the light on the other side of the tunnel. 6 days left. We're tracking it here, especially on Fridays. House Bill 2, that's the main budget bill. That seems to be tracking along okay. I saw activity in the Senate yesterday on House Bill 5. That's a budget bill for building projects. It was overladen with pork, according to some in a committee, and they tried to pull some of that back out of the floor session in the Senate, manage some. We'll talk about that here today. Oh, yeah, and there was a little disturbance. That's all over the news. Yes, we have the Dem Power Hour for a Friday on Voices of Montana. Right into it today. I know it's a busy day, probably a full busy weekend as well for our legislators in the Dem Power Hour, as they like to call it. Formally, it's the Minority Party Hour, but I like the ring to it. Kim Abbott, House Minority Leader, joins us today. How you doing, Kim?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thank you for being here. How was that opening? Are you excited for the weekend now?
I love it. It was so good. Pumped.
I know, because you're a Cleveland Brown fan, so I imagine Bob Seger kind of rings true in your world too.
Yeah, just anything that sparks resiliency, you know.
Hey, again, thanks for being here. This is for me, it was a difficult. I can't help but say I was very disappointed in the actions of Representative Zoe Zephyr on Monday. I'm going to start. I felt that she planted, instigated this. I felt it was very much right for the leadership to take the action that they did. I know people have to get past it. We talked about it yesterday. Let's talk about it here today from your standpoint. Obviously, as the House Minority Leader, she's a member of your caucus. How were you able to advise her along the way here? And I know you're probably a little bit tired of talking about it, because as we have talked here, we'd like to get work done. But this is time for these important channels to communicate over this issue.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think, and we talked a little bit before we were on air, Tom, about how it's a balance for our caucus. You know, we've worked really hard for 4 months to advance our priorities, whether it's affordable housing, childcare, property tax relief, investing in our mental health infrastructure and nursing home infrastructure. And a lot of those priorities, one way or another, are still alive in this building, despite the fact that, you know, we have just 32 members in our caucus. We've worked really hard across the aisle with partners who are willing to sort of step up, Republicans that are willing to say, okay, we agree on this. Let's see where we can compromise. So down the stretch here, we're trying to balance the fact that one of our members was silenced and 11,000 people that she represents were disenfranchised over the last week and a half, with the fact that we need to deliver for our communities and we need to get work done. So it's been a challenge, for sure. And, you know, in terms of advice for Zoe, you know, she makes her own decisions, and she's very articulate when speaking about the decisions that she made. And she felt, that it was important to stand up the way that she did. And, you know, in terms of advice for her, I said, you know, you need to do what you believe is right, you know, and that was pretty much the advice that I gave her. And, you know, the speaker made a choice not to recognize her for a week, which I think was the wrong choice. I was clear about that. And then, you know, after Monday, they took a literally unprecedented path in terms of the punishment and the removal of Zoe from or Representative Zephyr from the floor. So a lot of things have happened in this building in the 10 years that I was in this building as an advocate working on policy advocacy. And since I was elected in 2016, that I've seen and that have been disruptive, whether it was, you know, in the Senate when a bunch of members took part in an action, or whether it was, you know, what Representative Wendy Boyd mentioned on the floor, which was like an actual physical altercation on the floor, and nothing this extreme has ever been done by a speaker. So it's unprecedented, and I think it's extreme, and I disagree with the speaker, and we've had a number of conversations about it. Obviously, he has the power to do this, and the majority party has the power to do this. The Constitution grants them that power. You know, my point is, I think there were other choices that would have been less disruptive, and I would like leadership to take those avenues, and that's sort of where we are right now.
And I'm going to counter, and I appreciate that. I think the action by that member was unprecedented as well. So I think that sort of forced the hand. You had said, and this is where I would respectfully, well, and even strongly disagree with you, when you said on the House floor in debating that motion to expel her, you said that the one person who could have changed that outcome was the speaker. And I strongly disagree with that, because anybody who walks into that building has to have humility. And humility does mean the ability to acknowledge your actions and analyze your actions and to apologize for the offense. She did not have to apologize for her advocacy, but and this is why I thought that the rule, and you talked about this, and maybe we get into it here too, 2020, I thought Speaker Regeer used that rule to give an opportunity for the representative to apologize one day, 2 days, 3 days. It didn't come. But I still believe that this squarely sits on the shoulders of Representative Zoe Zephyr.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we disagree, and I think that's okay. I think a lot of Montanans are having disagreements and hard conversations about the balance here between core principles of democracy, like ensuring that, you know, people have fair representation and free speech principles with the need for decorum and order. And, you know, I've been clear over the course of this that Zoe, if the speaker or the majority leader thought that Zoe violated the rules of order, she should have been called to order at that time. The majority leader objected to the comments, but no one was called to order. The rules weren't followed there. The rules have been unevenly applied this session, I think. And, you know, I think going forward, we can be better about that. Both the minority leader, won't be me next time, you know, but and it won't be majority leader Vinton next time. But like going forward, I think we can have conversations about making sure that we're enforcing consistently. That's something that could come out of this, so that things are clearer. But you know, I think it's okay to have a disagreement about this. And the bottom line for us is that we feel like, my caucus feels like, we are defending a first principle of a representative democracy, which is that the 11,000 people the Representative Zephyr represents deserve to have their representative engage in free debate on the floor, which is the right of all members. That's our stance on this. And, you know, we also want to get work done here. So we're balancing that and really trying to just try to see the finish line, you know, and try to come home. You know, I am home because I represent Helena, but like try to go home and be able to say, this is what we did on the things that you asked us to do. This is what we did on housing. This is what we did on childcare. This is what we did on mental health. So we still have an opportunity to do that in the next few days. That's got to be our focus too.
Yeah, and I think that's the professionalism of that building, is that I think people are going to be able to see this instance and then put it in a place where it belongs. Maybe historically it might have significance. You know, I'm not so sure. Some people will feel it's very historic, but like you said, disruptions do happen. They're all circumstantial, and I don't believe that this was just a single case here in terms of comments directed to the opposition that were called into question. But let's move on, because there is a lot to talk about, and I appreciate you know, the discussion there. But let's I want to start with House Bill 2. Since that's the one, it looks like that is pretty much across the finish line. We'll talk about some of these other big funding bills, but what's your sense on that, in terms of how it began, you know, to the governor's proposal, how it was shaped by the legislature, and how it might have an effectiveness in our society?
Yeah, so the budget, you know, our caucus, our vice chair, who's been on your show, I think, Representative Mary Cafaro, worked incredibly hard with our team on appropriations to really try to get our fingerprints on a budget that we thought was inadequate from the governor. And, you know, we talked about it what feels like 6 or 17 years ago, but was really just probably 3 months ago, about how we thought the governor's budget didn't meet the moment and didn't address the level of the crisis that we're seeing in a number of different areas in our state, like nursing homes closing, like access to mental health care, like access to attainable housing, childcare. And so you'll see that there are a number of changes along the way that Democrats and Republicans in the legislature worked on. And I think the budget is looking much better than it did when we started, and much better than it did when it left our chamber. We're going to have to take a look and assess whether our caucus concurs on the amendments. We saw I think all but one Democratic senator voted against House Bill 2 on third reading. So we'll take a look. We'll trust our team on approach to sort of explain the changes and where it's adequate and where it's inadequate on our key priorities. But we get another chance on the board on the budget because it'll come over with a do concur motion with the Senate amendments.
You know, we're going to see this with H. Bill 5 as we discuss that upcoming here too. Yeah. Late in the season, the pressure to pass bills as is. And that's why I think these main bills, you know, I counted HB 2, there was like 150 or more, maybe it was 105 or whatever. It was well over 100 hearings on that thing. These bills are very much vetted. But at this late stage in the session, can the legislators avoid that pressure? I have to do something here and still get late work done on a bill like this.
I think so. It used to be quite routine for House Bill 2, the budget bill, to go to a free conference committee at the end of the session to sort of work out differences between the House and the Senate and priorities. That hasn't happened for the last several sessions. I don't know what'll happen here, but you know, we have the ability in our process to make sure that everyone gets sort of a final look and a final vet. So the motion comes back with a do concur motion. If we aren't sure, we can vote not to concur and we can go to a free conference committee and take another look and and move some things around and make some changes. So those are options that we have available to us on any bill that comes across, and certainly on, you know, something so major as the state budget.
Let's take a break and come on back. We're with House Minority Leader Kim Abbott, representing the Helena area, and again, part of our Minority Party Hour, or the Dem Power Hour, as they like to call it. And Skip standing by in Hamilton with a question about some bills. We'll look at HB 5. That's a main bill for funding building in Montana, so that ahead here on Voices in just a bit.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Welcome back. Tom Schultz alongside. Just a reminder, Montana Attorney General Austin Knutson on Monday. We'll have executives from Northwestern Energy on Tuesday. I'll have more on that in a later portion of this program. And then also, we start something to highlight some of our special 4-H members across the state. So that is upcoming for next week, and I'll have more on that in a bit as we return to the House Minority Leader Kim Abbott here on the Dem Power Hour. You just totally sold me on that one, by the way.
I'm so pleased. Yeah. It might be my greatest accomplishment of the session.
I know, that's right. let's go into. Oh wait, Kip, Skip, listening in Hamilton has a question for you. Skip, thanks, sure. And thanks for standing by. Go ahead, Skip.
Well, and thank you, Tom, and ma'am. The words "sine die" have come up a couple of times in this session, and Sue Vinton, in fact, used them at the end of her statement the other day, dealing with the Representative 100 issue. And so would you please explain to us what those words mean? I believe I know what they mean, but I thought it might be an educational moment for everyone, nonpartisan, exactly what they mean. And I appreciate it if you could explain how they were used, in fact, the other day, and if there was ever a vote on it, that it could have brought everything to a halt for a while.
Well, in fact, there was a motion to sine die, which, Kim, I guess I don't know. I know what it means. End of session, I guess. And Skip, thanks for the question. And I'm curious about that, too. There was a motion, and I didn't catch who it was, but it was after one of the disturbance things. To sine die, and the speaker said that's in order, and so right then and there they voted on whether or not to conclude the session. Comments on that, though?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Skip. So sine die is the final motion where we adjourn the session and we won't sit again in the 68th session. So it's outlined in the Constitution. It's a Latin phrase. I'm not sure exactly what it means. I think it means literally like without a day, but it just means we're done, you know, and it's a motion that we make when we do not plan to meet again during the session. And the only thing constitutionally that we are required to do as a body is pass a state budget. So typically you will see the motion for sine die happen once we have taken our final vote on the state budget. So a third reading vote on a do concur motion would be sine die. And there are some restrictions around it. We have 90 days to complete our work. If we don't complete a budget in 90 days, we have to come in for a special session. And that's a constitutional limit on how much we can meet in one session. And it's 90 legislative days. We are on day 84, I believe. Who's counting, Tom? But then the other thing is that's just important to note is neither chamber can sine die before day 87 without the permission of the other chamber. So we're sort of forced to work together right up to the very end. And so that's what sine die means practically. And we're all pretty excited.
What was the reason for a sine die motion then right after? I guess it was a call to order appeal.
Yeah. So that was Representative Cordham. He's in my caucus. I think it was a show of frustration, honestly. But I don't want to guess at his motivations. But
okay.
I think,
all right.
I guess what it was.
Yeah. Well, I just didn't know if there was another ulterior purpose for that. You know, because politics there's a lot of layers.
He garnered 8 votes on that one, so he might have the record, except for yesterday when Representative Kearns got 4 on an amendment. So,
House Bill 5. Okay, I don't know a ton about it. These figures, they just run in and out of my head. I think there's 100+ million or more. In a Senate Finance Committee, I didn't see the hearing, but it was referenced as I watched the floor debate in the Senate yesterday. Where they just added a lot of bills they felt were vetted and were part of other process, but missed transmittal deadlines or this or that against the many layers. Right now, what's your stance on House Bill 5? Because as one of the members of the Senate had suggested, member leadership said, the governor is going to look at this and line item veto his to his heart's content on some of these pork projects. So your assessment on that, and then help us understand how much authority the governor has in a line item veto.
Sure. Yeah, House Bill 5. So there's a set of bills that come out of Section F of the Appropriations Committee, and it's all infrastructure projects. So Representative Hopkins out of Missoula is the Republican chair of that subcommittee. Our member is Representative Paul Tuss from Haver on that committee. And they do like really good work putting together infrastructure projects and prioritizing them. And, they're really important set of bills that do everything from community projects like House Bill 5 to rural water projects and House Bill 8. They're consistently very important bills session to session. House Bill 5 really allows for communities to come in and pitch a project that they need and get financing for it. And so that's what you see. And, you know, I heard you call it pork. I assume that's because Senator Fitzpatrick called it pork. But really, this is an opportunity for communities to come and sell projects to us that they think are valuable to their communities. They're like brick-and-mortar projects, right? So that bill, it makes sense to me, given the context that we're in with a historical surplus, you know, just like a generational opportunity to invest in things, that more projects are being put in because that's one-time only money, right? Like, we have it now, but it might not be ongoing. We're not sure. So it makes sense to me that you would put one-time only money into infrastructure projects that, you know, would benefit a community for years to come. And there's not an ongoing financial liability there. So we saw a lot of that. I think there's a lot of wonderful projects in House Bill 5. And also, if we're not careful, we will abdicate our authority and power as a legislature and give the governor the opportunity to make a whole bunch of decisions that I think should be ours. So we need to be careful about that. And when that bill comes back across to the House, we talked a little bit about we'll get the opportunity to either concur or not concur. If we don't concur, we'll go into a free conference committee, which will have three members of the House and three members of the Senate, two Republicans from each chamber, one Democrat from each chamber, that will need to pound out a compromise, or else that bill won't advance. And so it's a high-pressure situation that forces compromise. I think it's good. And if we send House Bill 5 to the governor, he has the opportunity to do what's called an amendatory veto, where he can go through within the title of the bill and he can choose to eliminate projects. And that comes back to us and we vote on that. It's called the governor's amendments, and it's a simple majority to accept. And so if we have 50 votes that say we don't accept, the bill goes back the way that it originally went to the governor, and he gets an opportunity to either sign it, straight veto it, or let it become law without his signature. Those are his choices at that point.
Then does he do that for each and every one of these projects that he hopes to amend out, or does he have one set that has multiple projects in there?
Yeah, we would see, and you can look it up online. I'm trying to think of what has had a governor's amendment that I could show you, but what we get is a letter explaining the changes that he's made. It's addressed to the speaker, or it's addressed to the president. We all get a copy of it, and then all of the changes that he made are contained in that one amendment. So if he pulled out three projects from Missoula and a project from Billings, project from Miles City, we would get to look at all of those, and we either accept or reject.
Ah, well, that puts a little bit of pressure on him too, then, doesn't it? Because could he do it another way? Could he send a governor's amendment for individual projects so that, if he feels that one project has been vetted satisfactorily, he does not want, he wants to include that. Can he do those individually?
You know, Tom, I don't think so, but I am not positive on that. I don't know if there's a procedural way that he can do that. I haven't seen it. Doesn't mean it's not possible.
Well, and I'm sorry, we're getting technical here too.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I've run us out of time. Kim, I know you're busy. I've got a headline here. Do you have any closing thoughts? I mean, is there something that you want us to watch? What should the public be watching for in the last 6 days here of this session?
I think watching what we do on the budget, what we do on infrastructure, it'll be really interesting to see. You know, I've been saying if we don't start to make some hard choices as a legislature, and, Republicans have a lot of votes and they've sort of moved a whole bunch of spending projects through, pretty soon, if we don't make hard decisions, the governor's going to have to make the hard decisions for Republican legislators. And I hope we don't do that, because I value our branch and our role.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting down the stretch. And I just want to say this might be our last time during the session. And I want to say that it's so fun to be on with you every other week. And I really enjoy it. And thanks for having me.
Me too, Kim. I likewise. And I've appreciated, like I said, we have these open communication lines. Sometimes the issues are difficult, but this is why we do that. I very much appreciate you. Thank you for your public service, too.
Thanks, Tom. Okay.